and welcome back to Coven,
where we curate our dream Coven roster.
I'm Riley.
And I'm Jenna, and we are your hosts.
Welcome to episode
six.
Six or seven?
I think it's six.
I don't remember.
I think we're on six.
Six. You're right. Six. Okay. Episode six. Thanks for joining us again.
Cinnamon orange tea today.
I'm also drinking, not orange. Peach.
No.
I'm drinking
citrus
peach
vibes.
Tea. Peach is
maybe
not
it has
citrus
to do.
Peach what? Is a stone fruit.
I feel like I would consider peach
no
in the citrus family.
Well, you would be wrong.
It like gives citrus vibes.
Well, it's a stone fruit because there's a stone in the middle.
Well, stone fruit gives citrus vibes.
Nope. It's very different.
Because oranges and lemons have like mini stones in them. So
they have seeds in them.
Yeah, but anyway, they're seeds.
Welcome to Coven. I'm your fruit. I'm the resident fruit expert.
Anyway,
let's talk about our
magic moments.
Magic moments.
This is the part of the show where we discuss anything that felt synchronistic or magical or just really nice and beautiful in our week.
Yeah.
So
go ahead. Do you want to start this week?
Yeah, sure.
Okay.
My magic moment is really just how I felt so held when I had a really bad week, honestly. Because I was really trying to come up with a good magic moment, and I was struggling because I was like, this week was just terrible.
Yeah.
This past week.
I'm sorry.
But in thinking about that, I was like, you know what? I am so grateful. Like, okay, for listeners who aren't aware of my week, it's just that I was sick, like really sick all week with a mystery disease that felt like strep and looked like strep but apparently wasn't strep. And then I also totaled my car in a stupid parking lot fender bender. So it was just like one thing after another, and I'm like waiting to hear back about things that are very important for my future decision planning, and it's all just felt very like stagnant and frustrating. But my magic moment is that in thinking about, I don't know, like if I was back in Nashville when all of this was happening, it would be so much worse. And so being with my family, like when I wrecked my car, being able to call my mom and she could be there. And I'm like 27 and in so many ways feel like I should be on my own, an independent adult. And in Nashville, I really was pretty independent in that way. And now I'm living with my sister. And so it's like no matter what, I have a roof over my head and my mom could be there when I was sick to give me a hug and tell me it's going to be okay and to pick me up. Yeah. And she's letting me use her car. So I just found a lot of gratitude in that when searching for my magic moment.
That's really sweet. I always miss my mom so much when I'm sick. She's like,
oh my God,
oh my God. Like I'm pretty sure she's Cancer moon. So that's like when she like comes alive is like when someone needs her and she knows how to
care.
Like
provide
and like, and make you feel comfortable. She loves to just like anything to make you feel comfortable. So she'll like, now that like we live apart, she'll like send me medicine when I'm like, I could get this a lot sooner and easier myself.
That's
but
so sweet.
I appreciate that you want to help out. So I'm like jealous because I'm also sick this week. I'm like jealous that you have your mom.
Oh my God. No, and
it's
so true.
Nice to have a mom when you're sick.
And that is something I'm really, I haven't had my mom when I've been sick in like almost a decade. And so that is actually, thinking about it now that you just like said all of that, that is actually really special to be able to just go to my mom's house and like be like, mommy,
like
take care of me.
Healing.
Totally. Yeah. Also synchronistic with my my progress lunar return, 27 being your fourth house, perfection year, and all about your inner child and home. What's your magic moment?
Timing of everything. I'm kind of winging it. I didn't think about it too hard before we did this. I have a lot of, like, I actually do have a lot of good things happening right now and, like, exciting things on the horizon, which I feel like hasn't happened for me in a long time. like, a lot of things that I'm looking forward to. But
that's amazing.
Yeah.
That's exciting. It's
nice. Yeah, it is. Yeah, I might get to, like, travel for work this weekend, which I'm excited about and didn't think was going to happen anytime soon.
You are moving into your dream apartment.
Yes. I wasn't sure if I was going to bring it up yet because we haven't, like, nothing's, like, official, but, like, we're to the point where we're just waiting to, like, get the lease and sign that and everything. But yeah, and I feel like if it wasn't last week's episode, then it was the week before. I was like, we're going to stay in our place and we love our neighborhood. And like,
I thought we're set up.
I know. But one thing about us is we love change and love to, I don't know, we're just at the whim of the universe all the time. But
two very Uranus ruled individuals, Riley and her partner. Yeah, I remember when I was there, we were looking at it and you guys were both like, your prominent planet was both like Uranus, I'm pretty sure.
I think it was Uranus and for me,
Neptune.
Other thing. Yeah. I was like, I think it was Neptune because I remember talking about Pisces stuff, but yeah. Can you hear my cat?
He's saying hi. Like, hi, Salem.
He's literally putting his paw under the door. He's like, please, we have let me
mine
in.
Right there.
Oh my god.
So you're joining us today.
He can tell that Pedro's right there. He's like, my sister. But anyway, our apartment. I'm super excited. It's like, seems like it's going to be like the ideal situation for us. Like, my commute will be better. We're going to be in like a single family home with like really cool landlords who like also live there and seem like we could potentially like have a good relationship with them and like be friends with them. And there's a patio, which was like, we weren't even thinking about moving with like our lease coming up, like ending soon. But then our friends sent us this listing and it was like, oh man, this is like kind of everything we were wanting if we did move. And then it all just kind of like, we were like, okay, let's just go see it. Let's see what happens. And then just like one thing led to another. And then, oh, and I was out with the friend that sent me the listing and we were like talking about it. And she was like, I feel like if you could just talk to the landlords, like they would see that you guys would be like the perfect people for this. Mm-hmm. And then like an hour later, I get a text message from the real estate agent saying like, hey, the landlord wants to have or the owners, whatever, want to have a Zoom with you tomorrow. Like, are you available to talk to them? And I was like, oh my God.
Okay. Yeah. This is all synchronistic.
Yeah.
As fuck. This is a very good magic moment.
Yeah. And like, yeah, even down to like, it's so silly, but even down to like the paint colors in the apartment are like exactly what I was wanting to do, like in our current place. If we had like stayed and really settled in here and stuff, I was like, oh, I want to paint like the kitchen cabinets green and the kitchen in this apartment is green. And like, yeah, it's just,
you manifested it.
I really did. I forget how powerful I am sometimes.
One thing about Riley, this bitch can manifest and she never believes that she can until she manifests everything. It blows my mind.
Oh yeah. And yeah, I feel like it's like my closest friends that point out like, remember when you were like saying that this is exactly what you wanted? I'm like, oh,
speak it into existence.
I'm so powerful.
Also, my eyes are dying with allergies, so if it looks like I'm crying, I'm not. Or maybe I am.
She is. Yeah, and my also voice have is also, allergies. My voice is gross. I'm congested.
We're struggling here, so.
But we're still getting the content out.
We're going to do it. We're going to do
no
it.
More than that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, but okay. I'm going to try not to cough and sneeze this whole time. Okay, we're going to start this off with Jenna's blind birth chart reading of the person that I'm inviting to our coven this week. So I'm going to pull that up. And this is an estimated time. I have an exact day and year, but an estimated time. So rising may not be completely accurate. And it could be between two locations, but they're close enough that it wouldn't make any like major changes. Mm-hmm. And I think I just picked one of the places and I was like, this feels like it fits better. So, okay. So let's pull. Can you see it?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So I'm going to read these off for
Leo rising like me.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to read these off for our people who are, for our listeners that aren't watching on our YouTube. But if you want to see these visuals, you can check us out on our YouTube channel and follow along with us. So we have a sun in Cancer, a moon in Pisces, Mercury in Gemini, Venus in Leo, Mars in Cancer, Jupiter in Aries, Saturn in Aquarius, Uranus in Aries, Neptune in Aquarius, Pluto in Aries, North Node in Sagittarius, Chiron in Leo, Leo rising, and a midheaven in Aries.
Mm.
So,
mm-hmm.
Let me know what you think, and I will, well, I'm not going to chime in yet, but let me know what you think.
Interesting. Leo rising with Venus conjunct her ascendant opposite Saturn in Aquarius. Very difficult lessons learned from relationships and partnerships. Her strongest lessons and her most important lessons, karmic lessons from partnerships and relationships.
Interesting.
But in a way of like, maybe not embodying her light and her gifts until going through some very painful experiences of relationships that totally smothered her light and her gift, and needing to like literally break through that and be able to express herself after breaking through that and in a much stronger and more potent way. Okay. Sun in the 12th house in Cancer. Sun in the 12th house is always a tricky placement. Mars is there too. Sun in the 12th house, I always say, is like the placement of you are your own worst enemy, that phrase. Mm-hmm. Kind of getting in the way of yourself, not believing in yourself, a lot of self-doubt, also a lot of escapism. Well, that combined with her 7th house Aquarius Saturn placement right here is like a lot of issues with people like dominating, or like people not believing in her, people doubting her abilities, or people wanting her to fail, even though she has this incredibly powerful signature of this Leo rising conjunct her Leo Venus. Is like she was born to shine and succeed, mm-hmm. basically, but mm-hmm. there's a lot of people who don't want her to. So it's like really fighting strong against that, and that just makes her shine even more.
Yeah.
Something that's interesting, I feel like a lot of the people that we've done have had a north node in Sagittarius.
Really?
Yeah, I feel like Hypatia did.
Mm-hmm.
And I think my next person does, or maybe it's her south node.
Interesting.
And I feel like there was somebody else who had a north node Sagittarius, but maybe it's just them. But that's interesting. I mean, that's north node Sagittarius, especially being down here alone. Mm-hmm. All of her other placements are up on her like northern hemisphere, and this one's the only one that's kind of in her lower hemisphere. That is like a really strong pull toward expanding people's awareness, expanding our perspective of life and the universe. Her Cancer sun is forming a trine with her moon in Pisces. This is a very intuitive individual, especially Cancer sun in the 8th house, Cancer in the 12th house, Pisces in the 8th house, extremely in tune with her intuition and her emotions, kind of all of like the hidden unseen things. It's also somebody who's probably pretty introverted and protective of her inner world, a little bit more cautious with opening up to people, even though she's a Leo rising and it's kind of her signature to be vulnerable and for the world to see. Trust issues. I mean, trust issues you can already see with the Saturn in her 7th house. Aries midheaven in her 9th house, which is interesting, instead of her 10th house, which is where the midheaven usually is, or more often than not. But your midheaven is in your 9th house too.
Oh, it is?
Yeah.
I don't remember what it is.
And it's also conjunct Pluto. Remember in another episode I said all of these women for the most part have some prominent Pluto aspect, which just like intensifies their purpose, intensifies their desire to leave a mark. And tap into their power. And so conjunct her midheaven in Aries, that is very much like she's here to do something in a completely different way. In her ninth house too, ninth house is ruled by Sagittarius. So again, with that Sagittarius north node, it's like here to completely blow people's minds, change the way people see things. Sagittarius ruled by Jupiter. Jupiter's in her ninth house in Aries too. So that's also where her abundance comes in. And that's also where Uranus is. So all of like the really big important things are going to be like the big milestones, the big things that she's probably known for are going to be in this ninth house Aries energy of this independence, kind of bulldozing, changing the way people see things. And lastly, she's a Leo rising, so her chart ruler is her sun in Cancer. With Mars there, I mean, it's just like a really strong drive to like overcome her lineage, because Cancer is about it's like karmic, it's like ancestry, and having your sun there, it's like illuminating your lineage, illuminating where you come from and your roots. And Mars just kind of like adds to that passion of like, let me shine a light on this. Let me like overcome this in a way. Yeah, I think that's it for me.
Great insight. I think, and we'll see it in my story, but I think for multiple reasons, we don't have a ton of insight into her actual like personality, but there are aspects of her story that I think you've really like hit the nail on the head. And so, but potentially this gives us insight into her personality that we don't necessarily have records of. So it's interesting just to hear all of that for sure. And also, oh yeah. And then I was going to ask, could you potentially like guess what maybe her, like, because we've had everyone that we've covered has like some sort of like thing that they, you know, their work is involved around, or their you know, their whole life is kind of revolves around and stuff. Is there, can you deduce potentially from her chart like maybe what her area of purpose would be?
What I mean,
work is in, and work being not like vocational necessarily, but like, yeah.
Well, let's see. She has her, she has her Mercury's in Gemini in the 11th house, trine her Neptune. That's like creative writing. But the Leo, what I would really be drawn to is the Leo rising conjunct Venus opposite Saturn. That's just like, I mean, that's a performer, somebody who's expressive. And with Venus there, it's like a performer of like beauty and art of some kind. So whether that's like literally like being an actor, a dancer, something like that, something where you're shining your light in a way that is like you're on a stage and you're demonstrating like the beauty that is life through you. That's what the Venus, Leo Venus conjunct ascendant. If it's not like actual performing, I would say like writing or drawing. I don't know. I feel like I'm going to stick with the performing thing.
Okay.
Is that right? Am I wrong?
I'd say you're like half right.
Interesting.
I like the way you said performing beauty and art, because I think that fits.
Yeah. But,
okay, are you ready to hear who it is?
Yeah.
Okay. So this week, I'm inviting the first professional Black and Indigenous sculptor in the United States. And
no, because ever... I was just going to say, is she a sculptor?
Oh my God, you should have said it.
I was just going to say that.
Okay, shit. Okay.
Trust my intuition.
You should. The first
because I was like, I don't want to just ramble off Go different ahead. Art forms and make it seem like I'm just like spitballing it. But that was literally the one that just came to mind, was if she's not a performer, maybe like something with her hands where she's like making art. But like,
I had a feeling I thought you were going to get there with what you were saying. Okay. The first professional Black and Indigenous sculptor in the United States and first ever to receive international acclaim, Wildfire Edmonia Lewis.
Wow, I love that name.
Yeah, right? Powerful. So, Edmonia Lewis was born either in Ohio or upstate New York on July 4th, 1844, to a Haitian father and Native American mother of the Ojibwa tribe, who was an artist. Her mother was an artist. And she was given the name Wildfire at birth as part of her indigenous heritage. That was the tradition that was passed on to her. And her maternal aunts gave her that name, Wildfire. So that's why I chose a Leo rising for her. Because I think the other option was like, given the location mix-up, like the other option would have been like a Cancer rising. And I was like, I'm going to pick the Leo rising.
Interesting. Yeah.
So she was orphaned by the time she was 5 years old, and it sounds like she was thereafter raised by her maternal aunts in Niagara Falls. And there are a lot of accounts of her early life with inconsistent details, and even like throughout her life, because apparently Edmonia liked to change her history depending on whoever she was talking to. So she would change the details of her life to kind of appeal to her audience. Mm-hmm. And I thought like her Mercury in Gemini was kind of funny because of this, just because Gemini can be a little, you know. And I said it also gives Cancer vibes because they're known to be a little bit manipulative, especially emotionally. And don't come for me, Cancers, because I'm a Cancer rising. I'm well aware of this in myself even. Yeah, I could see her potentially being a Cancer rising because of this maybe too, like the way that she portrays herself to people being different depending on what she wants them to think of her. But yeah, like I said, her birth name, Wildfire, is why I went with the rising.
Well, I do feel like Leo risings as a Leo rising care a lot about like validation from people. Mm-hmm. So that still tracks. And what we were talking about with what I was saying with her son in her 12th house in Cancer is like wanting to like kind of correct or change her like lineage or where she comes from, of like break through that.
Yeah, when you said that, I was like, there were little pieces of that you were saying in her chart that you noticed that I think kind of tie in with her having these, many different accounts, maybe details embellished or... You know, there's some accounts that say that her her mom like maybe wasn't Indigenous, or she was like only part or whatever, and maybe she like enhanced it to make her seem like more exotic or whatever.
Oh,
especially later in her life when she like leaves the US, as we'll see. But anyway, I'm getting ahead of myself, as I tend to do. Okay. But that's pretty much all we really know about like her early life. And then going forward, we know quite a bit about like her education, thanks to her half brother Samuel, who found fortune during the gold rush, and he was able to finance her education, which was really a kind of a wild thing for like a woman of color in the 1800s. Like I said, she was born in 1844. So this is like, keep that time frame in mind in all of this, because I think that backdrop is really like, just makes her whole story really astonishing to me.
Like hits a lot harder.
So she was educated by an order of African-American nuns in Baltimore, and then later attended a co-ed school in upstate New York. After this, she went on to study art at Oberlin College in Ohio, which was the first college in the country to accept women and people of color along with white men. So even though Oberlin, I know, right? Interesting.
Okay, Ohio.
I know. So even though Oberlin championed this mission of gender and racial equality, this was still middle America in the early days of the Civil War. Keep that in mind. This is like 1860s. So this was definitely not a completely safe space for a woman of color to exist, let alone try and break through the glass ceiling. And she was studying art there, as I said, too, which was, you know, now
when was she
maybe. Go ahead.
When was she there?
The early 1860s, like the early days of the Civil War. So yeah, even though we might think of art as being like a like more feminine sort of area of study now, it was definitely not the case then. And it was it was very much like male, white male dominated. I mean, if you think of like art from that period, it's all the stuff that we know about anyway is like from white men. I mean, this was like similar-ish time, and like especially when she like gets more involved in it and stuff, similar-ish time to like Rodin and Degas and like in that kind of world and everything. So
it's funny because my person next week, I've been doing a lot of research about the same time period.
That's fun.
And yeah, it's like all white men, because women were expected to only do art after they already got married and had children, after they already fulfilled their duties, then they could do art as a hobby, but they were not expected to or respected to make art, especially I can't imagine a woman of color in that situation.
It's really interesting. And also just thinking, it was definitely viewed for women as like a hobby. This is not like something that anyone, obviously she was the first professional like person in this space, the first professional woman in this space, like at this time. And yeah, thinking of it as just like a hobby for women to like pass their days. And like, I just think of like Pride and Prejudice, like, it was just like, it was like, oh, you need to know how to draw. And like, if you're like an accomplished woman, you need to like know how to draw and like learn languages. But it's not to like, it, like further yourself or to get yourself anywhere. It's just like, it's like a status symbol.
To make you more desirable to men who want to buy you.
Exactly. So anyway. So Edmonia was one of only 30 total students of color at the time at Oberlin, and so she was very often subjected to prejudice and racism. She was barely able to speak up in class, and even started going by Mary in an attempt to blend in more. So there's some like biographies that call her like Mary Edmonia Lewis instead of just Edmonia Lewis, but I felt like honoring her truest self, we should just call her name that was given to her at birth. So
yeah, definitely.
I'm just going to call her Edmonia. Also, it's kind of a slay name. So
it is a super slay name.
So here's where things start to heat up. Things came to a boiling point when she was accused of poisoning a couple of her roommates. In 1862, Edmonia and her roommates, Maria Miles and Christine Ennis, were planning to go sleigh riding one day over their winter break with some young men. Maria and Christine suddenly became very seriously ill, to the point where doctors thought that they might not survive at one point. They concluded, I put in quotes, these doctors concluded that they had been poisoned with cantharides, which used to be used as an aphrodisiac that is actually poisonous to humans. It's like something from like a bug or like a beetle. But I don't know how it could be used as both when it's like, like how it was an aphrodisiac, but it's actually poisonous. I don't understand how that works, but.
You mean and also, alcohol?
You got a point. Yeah, and like very, very tiny amount. Yeah, I guess maybe the dosing had to be correct. Like horny with a side of vomiting and possibly death. Love that.
Right.
Anyway, also, there was like no blood testing in this time. That was not a thing. So it's really a surprise to me that they would be able to narrow it down to like that poison specifically. And poisoning symptoms are generally pretty similar across the board. Like I think they had like vomiting and whatever consumption things that they would say. Just like general things like that. And
so why did they think she did it?
I'm gonna get there. Okay.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah, I'm gonna get there. So, yeah. Yeah, and I don't think there's any, like, hallmark symptoms, like, any very specific symptoms associated with cantharides. So, I don't, again, like, I don't know how they came to this conclusion. It wasn't backed up by any real evidence, but people pointed fingers at Edmonia because she had made them a spiced wine before they went for their sleigh ride, and she herself didn't get sick. But my money's on one of the men that they were meeting up with. I think that makes the most sense.
Yeah, if it's supposed to be an aphrodisiac, for
sure. Yeah, I'm like, why would she be giving it to them? And yeah, I don't know. But
interesting.
Yeah. So once it was deemed that the girls would pull through, authorities dropped it and didn't pursue any sort of legal action against anyone, including Edmonia. However, there was such outrage in the town as this was a highly publicized incident, and like most of American history, there was a lot of high tension being projected from racist white people onto people of color who were just trying to live fair, equal lives and attain basic human rights. And again, this was go ahead.
Sorry. Were her roommates black or white?
I think, they were white. So I think that also played into it.
Yeah.
For sure. And again, this is like all on the backdrop of like it's middle America in like the early days of the Civil War. So
yeah.
You know, even though the college might have been a little bit of like a like progressive bubble, it seems that maybe the town wasn't.
Right.
Because of what happened next. While walking home alone one night, Edmonia was ambushed by a group of white vigilantes, beaten severely, and left to die in a field. She was bedridden for weeks, but she did recover. No one involved in that incident was ever apprehended. This attack prompted authorities to arrest Edmonia for the alleged poisoning. She went to trial and was... I know. Because there was so much like outrage. They were like, oh, well, I guess we have to do something about this. Like we have to make someone responsible for this situation, because everyone was like protesting, or protesting is probably not the right word, but everyone's saying like, obviously this girl did it, even though there's no evidence against anyone in any way.
Yeah.
But yeah. So Edmonia went to trial. This was the first of multiple trials that she that she had to go through while she was at college, because there were so many people like just trying to get her kicked out, I think, and like drive her out of town, especially after this incident, because so many people just believed that it was her. Like there was later like she was like framed for stealing supplies from the college, and then later framed for she was framed for like aiding and abetting a robbery, and was like put up for trial, and every time that she was put up for trial, she was acquitted of the charges due to a lack of evidence because people are just trying to,
like... that? See, okay, she's definitely a Leo rising because that Cancer, Mars and Sun, people wanting to just like shove her down constantly because they see how powerful and beautiful and how much she has to offer. And it's threatening. That's what, if you have a lot of placements in your 8th and 12th houses, that's unfortunately going to be very common for you. So listeners, if that's you, don't let the haters get you down. They're hating because they're afraid of you.
Yeah, for real. And that's, yeah, that pretty much sums it up. And then, yeah, just terrible. Just terrible. So, yeah, after all of that shit, back to back to back, she was not allowed, the college did not allow her to enroll in her final term. And so with financial support from her brother, she moved to Boston, where she studied under Edward Augustus Brackett. And so this was, she was just out of Ohio in this new scene and like able to not in like a formal education setting, was able to like learn and like work with her hands and learn from someone like a very well respected sculptor in the area, like make connections, and she did really well. And this was like a time where she entered like her full-on professional artist era, and she found success rather quickly in Boston. Yeah, despite not being able to attend formal classes, like I said, and since she wasn't a white man, she wasn't unable to attend anatomy classes to help her learn about the human form, because you could only go to those if you were a white man, because they want to keep you out. But despite all that, she became very successful, and she found popularity through creating busts and portrait medallions of abolitionists and Civil War heroes. The first piece she ever sold was a sculpture of a woman's hand that went for $8, which is $156.30 in today's money.
Wow.
I love a today's money moment, an inflation moment. And she had her first public solo exhibition in 1864. Like I said, she, at this time, she was making a lot of busts and artwork of Civil War people, leaders of Civil War movements on like the correct side of the Civil War. And people, it was like very common during this time for people to buy that artwork. And Edmonia made a good amount of money selling copies of a bust of Colonel Robert Shaw, who was a white Union officer in charge of an infantry of black soldiers. And once she found some financial independence and stability from those sales, she set off to travel the world. She visited London, Paris, Florence, and Rome, and decided to settle in Rome, where she found a community of American artists. And she was able to thrive in this artistic hub and found that she was subject to far less prejudice than she was in the States. Being a woman in this time, obviously, she still had to work harder to prove herself, but luckily there were many other women in her circle that were able to serve as her mentors, colleagues, and friends. So she was far from being alone in this environment. She worked under the neoclassical sculptor Harriet Hosmer, perfecting her craft and honing her techniques, and produced the most famous pieces of her career while she was spending this time in Rome. She also continued to make sculptures of famous American figures during her time in Europe. It's believed that former President Ulysses S. Grant posed for her at one time. Outside of that, her other works were inspired by classical mythology, biblical themes, and her Native and African-American heritage.
Yeah.
So you should look up her work. It's very, very beautiful.
I want to see it. Yeah. We'll post them.
I'm going to show you one of them. I'm going to show you one of her most famous.
Yay.
So, hold your horses. I'm almost there. So one other like very interesting fact that I found really impressive about her too. So it's very common for sculptors to make small models of their pieces. If you've ever been to like the Rodin Museum in Paris or seen like Degas mini ballerina sculptures. There's always like these tiny models that the artists themselves make, and then they hire other people to create the full-scale versions of their art, like in marble. But Edmonia did not do things this way. She did everything herself. She did not hire people to help her. She was one of the few artists to do that and completed every step of the artistic process with her own hands. Mm. She wanted to preserve her originality and remain in control of her pieces. So I know, right? This, I think, is especially impressive considering her most famous sculpture that she made called The Death of Cleopatra. You're going to like this.
I love Cleopatra.
I know you do.
The only reason I'm not going to cover her for our podcast is because she's too popular. Y'all already know about her, but she's in our coven. I've already invited her.
She definitely is. Yeah, I have a few of those too. Okay, so I'm going to show you this sculpture that she made. So if you're on our YouTube, or if you're not on YouTube, then you should be watching this on YouTube so that you can see the sculpture.
True.
Come watch our YouTube. Okay, sharing my screen. Here it is.
Wow.
Right?
That's beautiful.
Mm-hmm. She was good at her job.
She was good. That really looks like it could be like a Greek statue.
Yeah, I mean, that was like her area of expertise is neoclassical, which is inspired by like Greek and Roman sculptures from like forever ago. So yeah, all of her sculptures are like in this style, but then like some of them portray, like she has some that are like indigenous people or like freed slaves, and like they're just like really moving. 'Cause I mean, I feel like all art in this style is just like, because it's so lifelike, and then just like there's always just so much beautiful like movement, but then you think about how it's like made out of like stone is just so incredible. So I love neoclassical and like classical sculptures. They are like some of the most like moving, beautiful pieces of art to me. And then for her to take it and not just show like, you know, Venus or, you know, like Aphrodite, things like that, but
show like show some real like like intense, painful moments, or just like intensely emotional things,
and things that you're not used to seeing in that form of art, which makes her her work just like so incredible and like so interesting. So
sculptures are so interesting to me because it's like a 3D picture.
I mean, yes.
But because like there's just so much more that you can convey with it, like you're really getting like the nonverbal cues, like I don't know, it's just like so much more. It's just like everything I'm saying is just obvious, but it's so much rounder than, there's so much more depth to a sculpture, I feel like, than a painting. Although, not to say paintings don't have like so much depth too. Yeah. It's just interesting. There's so much humanity to sculptures.
Definitely. And I think just how they're like, obviously like you paint with your hands too, but it's like using, there's a bit of distance a little bit, because like you're using a brush and you're using paint and like, I don't know, but with it, like sculptures are made like with, I mean, you do use some tools, I guess too, but like you're using like your hand. I don't know. It just feels so much more intimate. And then like, And it's also just like, I don't know, to get stone to, I will literally never, like, I don't want to know. It's like watching like God make the earth or something. Like literally, don't want to know how this is made. I don't want to know how you can make stone look like silk or like, you know, like a it's dress insane. Flowing. I don't want to know how it's done because it just feels so magical to me. It's just like, I just don't understand it. Like I can understand how you paint something like that, how you get movement with paint and like light and like all of that kind of stuff. But with sculptures, I'm just like, I just like cannot comprehend how mm-hmm. that is done, and I don't want
to
know.
If you're a sculptor and you know the answer to this, don't tell us.
Don't write in.
It's divine, okay? It's pure divinity. No, but it really is. It's like,
that's so how
I was gonna compare it. I was gonna compare it to, like, it's like Frankenstein. It, like, it really feels like sculptors are like creating life.
Yeah.
With your hands and with your brain, and like creating this like actual body in front of you. It's just very interesting.
Yeah. It's just so beautiful.
It's also like interesting. Yeah. With the Leo rising and the Venus, because it is like very expressive and performative. This mm-hmm. like how you're describing her sculptures, and this one that we're looking at, it is like very dramatic and a show. And it really is like performing this experience and this story of Cleopatra's mm-hmm. death,
totally,
but in a way that's like removed from her. So it's not like she's the actor on stage doing mm-hmm. it. And that's interesting because of the opposition with Saturn, mm-hmm. Venus opposite Saturn being like a block in her like own self-expression. And so it's like it has to come out in this way that's one step removed from her, and yet in a way that is probably more powerful than it would be if it was her actually performing it.
Yeah, definitely. And I feel like she just, even like all of her other work too, she just picks very like poignant moments in like events and mm-hmm. people to portray. Like, yeah, just go look up some of her other pieces too, because they're just so beautiful. And
that's a very intuitive, like, that's a sign of high intuition to be able to capture a feeling or an emotion so intensely mm-hmm. and to express it and to recreate it in a way that makes other people feel it and understand it.
Yeah,
so
for sure.
And that's pretty witchy of her, in my opinion.
I know. And yeah, it's interesting you say that too, especially around the death of Cleopatra, like this one specifically, because almost every other like artistic, or like most artistic representations of Cleopatra depict her alive. There's very few that like touch on like her death or show her in death. So it just seems like so interesting and just spot on that she chose to show Cleopatra in this moment instead of like the many other, like, I guess, like amazing moments mm-hmm. in her life that she's known for, but mm-hmm. she instead shows her like in this aftermath of like her dramatic legendary suicide, by, because this is a mm-hmm. suicide, like alleged suicide, said to be by like a mm-hmm. fatal bite from a poisonous snake, which I actually don't mm-hmm. know that I knew that, or maybe just didn't remember it. I'm sure I've been told that at some point,
but maybe, like, I should cover Cleopatra then. Maybe we should do a Cleopatra episode.
Maybe if you want us to cover Cleopatra, let us know. She's already in the coven. We're just like not gonna tell her story. But like,
now I want to. Story,
okay.
Maybe I'll do it, but I'll surprise you. I won't let you know which one.
Okay, cool. Yeah, don't do it anytime soon.
Okay.
Yeah. Also, this piece is huge. This is also why I wanted to talk about it. Like, after I read the thing about like her doing everything by herself. This thing weighs 3,000 pounds.
Ooh.
And she shipped it from Rome, where she completed it, to Philadelphia to show it at like an exhibition.
Wow.
Yeah. She said, I'm taking this thing to the United States. You know what's so sad? It's like, okay, well, now this is in the Smithsonian, so you can go see this. You can go
Slay.
See this. I know. But literally until the 80s, like the 1980s, this was in a mail center in Chicago, and it was covered in graffiti and paint. Like,
no.
It just, yeah. After it was shown, like, at that exhibition in, like, the 18, what did it say? Like, yeah, the late 1870s, it just, like, disappeared for, like, 100 years. And then was, like, later rediscovered. And people were like, oh, this is actually, like, insane and important. And, like, her story is so important. And what she did was so amazing. Like, now it's in the Smithsonian. So it's finally getting, like, the recognition and the care that it deserves.
Wow.
I know.
That's insane. And also really interesting how similar your person is this week to mine next week.
Oh, really? Join us next week to hear.
We'll not elaborate on that at the moment, but
okay,
it's just really funny. I feel like this always happens.
Yeah, we be synchronized.
Synchronized for sure.
Yeah, but unfortunately, a lot of her other works have been lost to time, and a lot of her stuff has just like disappeared. So very sad. I know,
that's really sad. Maybe it will reappear sometime. Maybe we'll find it again.
You're right. Okay, I'm going to close this down. Oh, I also didn't mention that the death of Cleopatra was very controversial when it was shown in Philadelphia because her boobs are out.
And might I say, her boobs look exceptional in that sculpture.
Beautifully crafted.
They were offended by the perfection of her boobs.
So true. I am too, honestly. It's rude.
Get those away from me.
I don't want to see that. Okay. So, wrapping this up a little bit. But I wanted to talk a little bit about her astrocartography because Rome, I know, I don't think we've done this yet
For anyone. Haven't.
Yeah, okay. I feel like everyone else has had just like really long and complicated stories that there it was just...
Right.
Yeah.
Not a ton but of this, time left over.
Yeah, but while I was writing this, I was like, wow, Rome is like where she really like came into her own. Like it was just like the fullest expression of like everything that she wanted to do, and she really wasn't
held back.
Okay.
Either her Sun line or her Jupiter line or Midheaven.
Okay, so...
Am I wrong?
I'm going to pull it up. I'm going to pull it up, actually.
Okay.
This is a share screen episode brought to you by sharing
screens. I love it. It's interactive.
Wait, but every time I do this, I lose the thing that I'm trying to share.
It's okay. I have selenite with me this time to cleanse us.
Nice.
And to heal us. Listeners, if you want to be healed too.
Tune in to the crystal. Okay.
Do you feel better?
Yep. Okay. Can you see this?
Yes.
Okay. So literally this line goes right through Rome. Can you see what it is?
Oh, her Mars line.
Her Mars midheaven line.
Interesting.
Her Mars midheaven line. That's how I should have said
Mars midheaven line.
So I looked that up because I don't know anything. I know very
That's
little.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
I was not expecting it to be her Mars line because usually I would think of, although I don't know, I do think of Mars as like if you're on your Mars line, like New York is like my Mars midheaven line goes directly through New York. Mm-hmm. And every time I'm there, I feel extremely energized and motivated to, like, make shit happen.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, that's kind of what happened for her in Rome. It's like, yeah, that's where she found most success and, like, made, like, the biggest pieces of her career. And she was surrounded by, like, a really good community of,
like, supportive of, like, people.
Yeah, of American artists, of female artists, and, and like, other, so... I think it does make sense for her.
Yeah, I guess I was thinking originally with Mars line being where like a lot of conflict would happen. But well, I guess maybe. It could be just like,
we don't know that much about her personal life. So I know I really wish that because you were talking so much about her relationships and the chart thing. And I'm like, I don't know anything about that with her because there's just not any information really.
Yeah.
So
she definitely had some.
I mean, she never married.
Ones.
She never married. I never said that explicitly, but she never married, so we really don't know what she was up to. I mean, one can only assume.
I don't know, the way she shaped Cleopatra's boobs.
She spent a lot of time on those, you can tell. Every person that we cover is gay. some at least a little bit. It's a requirement to be in the coven.
And you know what? Sexuality is a spectrum. And so really, at the end of the day, we're all a little gay.
That's very true. And if you're offended by that, this is not the podcast for you.
Yeah. I was going to apologize, but...
No.
No.
This is really not a safe space for you if you don't agree with that.
It's a safe space, but maybe you should look a little deeper.
I rolled my eyes. For people not watching, I just rolled my eyes.
It's a safe and welcoming space for everyone if you're embodying your authenticity. And if you're embodying your authenticity, you're probably gay. Just kidding. You might be straight. It's possible to be straight.
Is it in this day and age? Anyway, that's going to get us
canceled. Yeah, I mean, if it's a spectrum, then there's going to be people on the far end of the spectrum. I just think that's less common than we see at the moment.
You're right. Anyway, back to the story. At the end of the story now. After her time in Rome, she spent time traveling once again, often back and forth between Europe and Boston. She sold pieces in the States to continue funding her artwork, but especially after the 1880s, she was mostly off the map, and not much is known about her last years. It was only recently discovered that she passed away in London, not Boston, as was previously believed, on September 17th, 1907, at the age of 63. And I'll take us out with this quote believed to be said by her, which I feel gives us a good idea of her attitude towards, like, herself, her life, her craft. "I don't want you to praise me. Some praise me because I am a colored girl, and I don't want that kind of praise. I had rather you would point out my defects, for that will teach me something."
Yeah, that's a good one. But okay. I don't want to point out your defects.
I know. We love you. You're perfect. No, she'd hate us for saying that.
She'd be like, "Y'all are dumb because I did poison those girls."
She said they were talking shit behind my back, and so I fucked them up. No. No.
No, I don't think
don't
she
speak
did.
Ill of the dead.
No,
I think it was.
I'm not speaking.
I think it was those men. I think they were old. Is this controversial? I think they were old time. Date rape. What's the date rape? Drugging them. What's the thing?
Yeah,
roofie.
Yeah,
old timey.
That's what I was thinking. It kind of sounded like. But
I mean, if they. But yeah, but then I think it's just wild in general that they were like, "Oh, it was this aphrodisiac poison." Mm-hmm. Like, where do you even get that idea? Anyway,
whatever. It's also It's also just wild that they would put blame on her when it's like she's already like. in such an uncomfortable position as like a person of color at this university, but also a woman of color at this university where people clearly I'm saying like people clearly already are like not really wanting her there. Why would she do something as stupid as poison her two white roommates? Like, I don't know, in my perspective, it seems like she would be extra careful to not get in any kind of trouble, to not draw attention to herself in that way.
Yeah. Well, I think it just goes, I mean, it's just literally a hate crime. Like they literally just hated her so much because she was
powerful.
Like, yeah.
And went against their idea of who's supposed to be powerful.
Exactly. And lower vibrational people, like, attacking higher vibrational people because they're scared of them. Anyway. So, I'm going to close this out. "Wildfire Edmonia Lewis shows us an example of a life very well lived in the face of adversity, especially during a time where it would have been so wildly, incredibly difficult to do so. I feel like I can't emphasize that enough, how she had so much going against her, like so fiercely, and so many people who would have bet on her failing, and people who physically and violently tried to stop her. And she wasn't the only person to do this kind of stuff during this time, but she certainly rises up as one of the most impressive as an unmarried, unattached, Black and Indigenous woman with more education than most, but still very impressive the level that she attained. And yeah, I think overall, just everything that we discussed about how intentional and how beautiful and impressive all of her artwork was, like everything that she accomplished in this life, like not even like against all odds, because she just like, it's just, even if all of those factors were taken away, it would still be just as like impactful, her art. Yeah. That is, like, it's just so, yeah, she made beautiful things in her time. And it's, yeah, just like, it's a shame that she was like forgotten for so long. And again, mm-hmm, that's like our aim with this podcast, is to talk about, mm-hmm, people who
bring them back,
fallen through the cracks. Yeah, but now we want to lift her up, we want to tell her story, and most importantly, we want to invite her to our coven this week. So thank, yes, you, Wildfire Edmonia.
Welcome, Edmonia. Welcome. We love you.
Yes, we love your work.
Okay, what's she doing in our coven meetings? Is she sculpting? Is she, what's her vibe? What do we think she's doing? Who's she interacting with?
Who is she interacting with? That's a good question.
I wonder if she's just kind of like sitting and observing. Because, yeah, according to her chart, remember I said she seemed like she'd be kind of introverted and closed, mm-hmm, off. Obviously, trust issues. Mm-hmm. Trust issues. Also, a lot of these women are white, and, mm-hmm, they are from time periods when racism was a thing. So maybe she was probably... I know, right? Yeah. But yeah, but just with that information, if we're taking, yeah, that into account, mm-hmm, maybe she's just kind of like
observing.
Yeah. Maybe
we can bring her out of her shell and learn her real true story. Her
definitely
real true life story.
We're also,
that's my goal.
We're also holding this coven in a space that transcends time. So in all actuality, and it would also be like these people who've all passed beyond the veil, we're, mm-hmm, having this coven meeting with the highest version of all of ourselves. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, racism doesn't exist in this coven meeting. Yeah. So in, yeah, actuality, maybe she's interacting with, I feel like I could see her getting along with Hildegard. Mm-hmm. Or, ooh, the wait, artist. No, Isadora. Oh my God, no, she would get along with Isadora.
Yeah.
The dancer, because, mm-hmm, Isadora was inspired by Greek statues too.
Mm, so they're talking about art history.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
Oh my God, and Isadora is like going to mimic some of, mm-hmm, Isadora Duncan's going to mimic some of her
collaborative
sculptures.
Piece. Yeah,
definitely. They're, yeah, collabing. That's where she is, for sure.
Yeah. Well, welcome. And thank you for being
welcome,
here.
Welcome, Edmonia. Yeah.
Cool.
Do you want a hint about mine?
Yes, of course.
For next week?
Yeah.
I know I've given a few hints already, so I'm trying to think of another one. I'm just going to say seances.
Ooh. Ooh, I love a seance. Person,
mm-hmm. Yeah, seances. I'm
okay.
Super excited.
Oh my God, I'm really excited. Okay,
she's a baddie.
Well, thank you guys for being here. Thank you for listening. Episode 6, so exciting. Please send us your magic moments, send us your I don't know, your suggestions, your anything you want to tell us to covenpod333@gmail.com. All of our sources will be in the show notes. You know the drill.
Follow us on social media. Yes. Instagram and TikTok at coven.pod. Mm-hmm. And find us on YouTube and, yes, all of your streaming platforms. We appreciate you, yeah, every single one of your listeners.
Great.
We noticed we're watching the analytics, and so we see you, and not individually, it's nothing creepy, we can't actually see you, but we see the statistics of like gender, and I think it's hilarious because right now our statistics are about 59% women And I'm not going to be able to do this math off the top of my head, so forgive it. But this is an estimate. It's like 59% women, 40% non-binary, and 5% men.
Yeah, that's more than 100%.
But... and we love that. Okay, listen.
Hello to the one man who listens.
It's something around that. Hello to the one man who listens. We love you, and yeah, we see you.
Thank you for being here. We support you, even though maybe it sounds like we don't sometimes.
We do support you. We support everybody's awakened and authentic version and expression of themselves.
Thank you, everyone, for being here. We'll see you next week.
Love you. Bye.
Thanks for joining our coven this week. You can find all sources used in the show notes. Don't forget to rate, review, and follow on all platforms, and like, comment, and subscribe on our YouTube channel. You can find us on Instagram and TikTok at coven.pod. Send us your magic moments and witchy recommendations at covenpod333@gmail.com. This has been a Stars Etc. production. Coven is written, researched, and edited by Jenna Scott and Riley Hale. Music by Jeffrey Boyle and Jenna Scott.